The Punishments. The Gift. Zeus's wrath was so overwhelming that all Olympus feared Prometheus would be blasted with such power that his atoms would never reassemble. It is possible that just such a fate may have befallen the once favored Titan, had not the wise and stabilizing presence of Metis inside Zeus's head counseled a subtler and more dignified revenge. The intensity of his rage was in no way dimmed, but rather it was now focused, channeled into clearer lines of retribution. He would leave Prometheus for the time being and unleash his cosmic fury upon man, puny, impudent man, the creature he had taken such delight in, and for whom now he felt nothing but resentment and cold contempt. For a whole week, watched by a grave and concerned Athena, the king of the gods paced up and down in front of his throne, considering how best humans should pay for daring to appropriate fire, for presuming to ape the gods. A voice within him seemed to whisper that one day, no matter what vengeance he took, mankind would reach ever upwards until they came level with the gods, or perhaps more terribly, until they no longer needed the gods and felt free to abandon them. No more worship, no more prayers sent up to heavenly Olympus. The prospect was too blasphemous and absurd for Zeus to entertain, but the fact that such a scandalous idea could even enter his mind served only to fuel his rage. Whether the magnificent scheme that was finally put into operation was his, or Metis's, or even Athena's, is unclear, but it was, Zeus believed, a screamer of a plan. There was a golden symmetry to it that appealed to his very Greek mind. He would show Prometheus, and by heaven, he would show mankind. First, he commanded Hephaestus to do as Prometheus had done, to shape a human being from clay moistened by his spittle. But this was to be the figure of a young female. Taking his wife Aphrodite, his mother Hera, his aunt Demeter, and his sister Athena as models, Hephaestus lovingly sculpted a girl of quite marvellous beauty, into whom Aphrodite then breathed life and all the arts of love. The other gods joined together to equip this girl uniquely for the world. Athena trained her in the household crafts, embroidery, and weaving, and dressed her in a glorious silver robe. The Charites were put in charge of accessorizing this with necklaces, brooches, and bracelets of the finest pearl, agate, jasper, and chalcedony. The Horai plaited flowers around her hair until she was so beautiful that all who saw her caught their breath. Hera endowed her with poise and self-possession. Hermes schooled her in speech and the arts of deception, curiosity, and cunning. And he gave her a name. Since each of the gods had conferred upon her a notable talent or accomplishment, she was to be called All-Gifted, which in Greek is Pandora. It is a subtler name than that, for Pandora can mean the All-Giving, as well as the All-Given. Hephaestus bestowed one more gift upon this paragon, which Zeus presented himself. It was a container filled with secrets. Now, you probably think I'm going to say the container was a box, or perhaps a chest of some description, but in fact it was the kind of glazed and sealed earthenware jar that is known in Grecian lands as a pithos. It is said to have been Erasmus, of all people, the great 16th-century scholar and prince of the humanists, who mistranslated Pandora's pithos, jar, into pyxis, box. "Here you are, my dear," said Zeus. "Now, this is purely decorative. You are never, ever to open it. You understand?" Pandora shook her lovely head.
"Never,"
she breathed with great sincerity.
"Never."
"There's a good girl. It is your wedding gift. Bury it deep below your marriage bed, but you must not open it. Ever. What it contains... well, never mind. Nothing of interest to you at all." Hermes took Pandora by the hand and transported her to the little stone house where Prometheus and his brother Epimetheus lived, right in the centre of a prosperous human town.